Have you subscribed to the OTB Football Podcast?
And in fact, the bloke who man-marked Graham's neck got a broken jaw. Ross Graham, shouldn't laugh.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast, stream wherever you get your podcasts, and download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Car insurance is boring, but saving money bounces it into brilliance. Enter promo code SPORT and save €40 off your car insurance with GetSetGo.ie.
You are very welcome back. It is 6 minutes past nine on this Tuesday morning. You're with us here on OTB AM, and we are turning our attention once again to the football. Mark Lawrenson, good morning.
Morning, all good?
All good, all good. So we want to get into Euro 2020 in just a moment and get your take on a couple of different questions here. But I just want to start with the Republic of Ireland. The Andorra game was never going to be billed as an important game if Ireland had won it. But win it, they did. And this is perhaps back to a level of expectancy that we would have be associated with Ireland over the last couple of years. So how important can a win, albeit against Minnows, be for a team low on confidence?
Well, it gives them something, obviously, to build on. We were one down as well, were we? Was that right? Did I get that right?
So
can you imagine how they felt on the bench? Can you imagine all the coaching staff, how they felt on the bench, thinking, oh, crikey, the headlines already. So, no, it was obviously a good comeback. Look, it is all about confidence. The problem is it's Andorra, and it's you know, painters, decorators, plumbers, whatever you want to say, but you've still got to beat the opposition. We know we've got an awful long way to go, and we can have this conversation virtually every week, but until we get something up top that was going to score, or somebody on a regular basis for us, it was just going to be really, really difficult. And as we know at this level, it's all cyclical. I mean, look at Scotland at the moment. It's taken them an awful long time to qualify. They've had a succession of managers who, in the club football, have been relatively successful. But, you know, it's until Clarkie's kind of come in and sorted them out, but they've also got players now at the same time. It's all about players. And until we get more quality, better quality, this is the way it's going to be, I'm afraid.
It's interesting when we think about what those players need to be doing at club level in order to have a meaningful impact on the Ireland team. Because it is interesting with Troy Parrott, for example, who had a tough season. Like, we can't make any bones about it. And then comes along and bangs in two goals. Again, it is just Andorra. But still, it is a brace for a kid who was struggling with form all season long. Can you put the cart before the horse in that respect, Mark, I guess, by having a player who is shooting the lights out at international level but perhaps struggling with club? Or is that just wishful thinking?
Oh, you can. I mean, it's possible. I mean, the thing with Troy is he's probably, over the course of the last season, he's probably learnt more about he's learnt more about the game. He's learnt more about himself. He's probably learnt the fact that, you know, he might have to work harder. He'll be getting coached every single day, because you know, just if a player's struggling, you don't suddenly drop him because you think he's got massive potential. So look, everybody has a season. Even the top players, you know, the top players coming to the Premier League have a great season, and the next season they're not quite as good. Don't get me wrong, they're still very, very good. But everybody straight away goes, oh, he's not the same player. Well, you know, that's the way that it is. And what doesn't kill you, it actually makes you stronger. And once you realise, you know, exactly what you should be doing and how you should be playing, which he probably will be by now because everybody's telling him, it'll just develop. And that probably goes for everyone, in all honesty. But without that ability, he wouldn't. But he's obviously got ability. So, you know, eventually he's going to become a very good player, I would expect.
Stephen Kenny was asked in his press conference yesterday about his tenure overall so far. He said that he would have wanted to have done better overall. I wouldn't try to paint a different picture. He said, I think there's a clear vision of the team we want to create. I want the team to have a clear identity. He mentions the fact that 13 players have made their senior competitive international debut in that period, and he said that that is a radical shift, and we are creating a stronger squad going forward for the three-game windows, a team that the supporters can identify with. Is there a sense, Mark, that even if the result perhaps doesn't go their way tonight, the next round of fixtures with fans in the stadium, let's not forget, for the Republic of Ireland, will finally be met with this sense of general appreciation for the team?
Well, you would hope so. You would hope so. And look, you know, Stephen Kenny, he probably doesn't sleep at night. In fact, I know he won't sleep at night at all, because he probably still thinks, regardless of the way that they play, it is all about results and always will be. So I think he's obviously trying to play a particular way, which is great. And what I would say is, you know, the FAI are actually giving him the time to develop the squad, but also to develop the way they play. But at some stage, you've got to start winning games. That's a necessity. Crowds back, massive, absolutely, as we know. And that will be the test. But, you know, let him keep doing what he's trying to do. It'd be daft now just to kind of cut him off at the hip and say, well, you know, you've had your chance. You've managed loads of games and the results aren't good enough. And thank you, but no thank you. So I think we've just got to stick with it and stick with him and see how we do, basically. You know, if you think, looking at all the players that he's got, if you think that he's improved them, then he's doing a good job. But the problem with that is that's great. But again, you've got to win games. It's just an absolute necessity in football life.
And it's interesting as well, looking at how he's tried to implement his own game plan over the past year or so, and the way in which they got at Andorra the last week was through a number of different crosses, basically. And maybe we thought that crossing was a dying art in football, but actually at international football, something more route one can often pay off, even if it doesn't feel like that's the way your identity actually fits in line with.
Yeah, well, you just got to have a mix, haven't you? And, you know, I mean, you go back to Jack and everyone, it was route one. But, you know, we had really good players in wide areas who delivered the ball in the box. And the thing about that is if you're we're just knocking long balls in all the time and I'm defending against these long balls, I'm facing the play all day and it's much, much easier. But if all of a sudden you're in wide areas, the opposition, and you're crossing balls in, you're kind of on the half turn and you don't necessarily know who's behind you, who's kind of running in there, who's going to come and run in front of you. So I think that's the difference. I mean, look, you know, you watch games. Look at, I'll have to go back to Liverpool because they're probably the best example, but look at the two fullbacks, the way that they cross. I mean, and don't underestimate, but you know, the quality of the crossing is brilliant. But you know, it's those wide areas where it comes in from. And they're smashing it in there. They're bending these balls in for players to run onto them. And as I say, it's really, really difficult to defend. And if you also cross with pace, you know, you've got the spectre there where, you know, you'll get own goals as well. Mm. So it's a long process, but you know, you've got to applaud the FAI in many, many ways because they're going, you know what, we're gonna stick with this and see what we do. They want to be in competitions, would love to have been in the Euros, you know, because of the money, etc., and everything about it. But it's not happened. So let's just make sure when obviously we start qualification again for whatever competition, that we're in there and we're in with a chance and a shout of actually qualifying.
Well, let's talk about the Euros then, Mark, because we want to get your take on a few different aspects of predictions, I guess, for the next couple of weeks. We'll start at the end, to the final next month. Who do you think is going to be the winner for Euro 2020 in your book?
Well, listen, if this goes to form, I mean, France should win this. Mm. I mean, they've got kind of almost three teams. They've got real strength in every single area of the pitch. You know, won the World Cup, etc. Same manager. Nothing really changes. They've got match winners. So I would go for France. I think England will have a chance because basically they're at home, aren't they? But the only problem with England is, and we've seen it before with them, is they have one very bad day in the competition. And sometimes if that bad day is in the knockout part of the competition, then they're out. And the other thing with England, and I'm not quite sure they really know what their best team is now. At the moment, I should say, and they've got one or two injury problems. But, you know, I was just reading some of the stuff this morning. If you look at most of the top teams, so your Germany, Netherlands, Italy, Portugal, who else have I missed? Belgium. They all think they've got a chance of winning this competition. It's probably, you might argue that, you know, the French apart, it's a really open competition. And the other thing, of course, is, If you don't get out the first group, I mean, then you don't deserve to win anything because what is it? So it's 12 first and second place teams, and then another four.
Yeah, only eight go home.
Yeah, which is, well, you know what that's all about. It's all about money. So it's more games for UEFA, more TV money. But listen, that's just the way that it is. So it's funny as well in these competitions that you kind of, you look at the games beforehand, the friendlies, they mean diddly squat. They really seriously do. And you can be awful before the competition starts. And then all of a sudden, you go in the first game, everything clicks, you get a win, and you're off and running. So it's going to be very, very competitive. I think it was good. I don't like the way that it's set up in all these other different countries, etc., which was, I think that was Platini's baby before he got kicked out, wasn't it? But that's just your way for trying to mess all the time and make things better. And to be honest with you, if it ain't broke, you don't really need to fix it.
Mark, you mentioned England there during your answer. And like, I guess the squad of 26 as opposed to 23 helps Gareth Southgate. He's got a lot of strength and depth in that team. But I mean, I was reading Karen Carney in The Guardian at the weekend, and she was talking about that, you know, teams that have won major tournaments in the past, the reality is they all have experienced spines. They have lots of caps between them. I mean, should the relative lack of experience of the likes of Sancho, Mount, Bellingham, Foden, clearly very talented players, all of them, but is the relative lack of experience at tournament level maybe a concern for England, that maybe they don't have that, I guess, experience in the spine that Karen Carney's talking about?
Well, I think when she means spine, I think looking at England, you kind of look at the back three, which arguably it will be. It doesn't look like Maguire. Certainly won't. He'll miss the first, maybe even the second game. So that's a blow. And why do you play with the back three? Well, you either play with the back three because you've got two wing-backs who are brilliant, or you don't quite trust your three central defenders, which is... trust two central defenders, which is why you go to a three. So I get Karen's point, and I think it's a good one as well. And I just think that's England's Achilles heel at the moment, defensively, especially without Maguire. And we know Maguire's not particularly quick or anything, but, you know, he's a headed kick it centre-back. He's a really, really good organiser. And if you've got a little bit of pace alongside him in the other two positions, then obviously that makes up for the fact that he's not quick. It looks like the goalkeeper's coming into form at the right moment, so that will be a bonus. I think probably with England, you know, they've probably got too many players to pick from. And, you know, the Bellinghams and the Fodens and Sancho and all those boys, they're going to be top players. But it's just that, how do you... Can you play all three of them? No. Can you play two of them? Not sure. So if that's the case, which one is it going to be? I mean, I think Foden's going to be, well, he's already a top player, and this might be, you know, a great time for him, but where are you going to play him? And who's going to play, not necessarily alongside Keane, but either side of Keane? That's the other thing as well. And exactly how are you going to play? Do you put Grealish in there? You know, he's probably got so many questions which he has to answer, Gareth Southgate. So in many ways, it's a fabulous problem to have, but it's a major problem for England. The fact they've got so many good players in certain similar positions, what you actually do with the team.
So what would you do, Mark, just on that forward constellation? So you have Harry Kane. Who are you playing around him?
I would play Sterling. Right. And I would play Foden. I know Sterling's, it looked towards the end of the season that he's lost a little bit of confidence, etc. But do you know what? He's lightning quick, absolutely lightning quick. And in those positions, you know, fullbacks, whatever you want to call them, or wingbacks to play against you, the thing that you really, really hate is pace, because it can tear you apart. We know about trickery, we know about all about those kind of things, but pace is the big thing. And I think I play him on the right, and then I Foden on the left, and Foden would probably drift in and let the left wing back, whoever it may be, come and almost play as a left-sided midfield player going forward. But I'd have Foden in the team, because also he sees passes that, you know, even the most experienced players don't see, and he's had a fantastic season. And then you can load the game after that with the bench. We talk about, you know, Sancho and Bellingham and all those kind of players. Again, fabulous pace, dribbling skills, all those kind of things. I think that's the thing with football as well. Now it's almost at times you almost play two teams in the majority of games because of the amount of substitutions that you can make.
The other thing with England, Mark, and like you talk about the home advantage of this England team, and it is stark. It is just a quarter final. If they top their group, that they will not have to play in Wembley. At the same time, you look at the back pages this morning, The Guardian. Johnson refuses to condemn fans who boo England taking the knee. It's the same in a lot of the other back pages. Yeah. This idea of the knee being booed beforehand is something that Gareth Southgate has come out and said, I will not answer any more questions about it. We've said our bit, we're going to continue taking the knee, and that's it. It feels like this is one of maybe a number of potential pitfalls of being a team with such massive expectations, playing in front of massive home crowds that are unlike anything they'll have seen in the last 15 months or so. Is there a way that home advantage, basically, Mark, could actually be to the detriment of England this year?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, you look at majority, probably more the Red Sox in terms of the papers, they're expecting England to win. But I don't know what they're basing it on. Because, as we know, in major competitions, they've been awful. Apart from, obviously, the World Cup, where they were lauded, and quite rightly, in some respects. But if you actually looked at the games that England won in the World Cup and the games that they lost, it was they beat a lot of ordinary teams, and when they played good teams, they got beat. So, but that's just the way the English journos are. They, you know, they have this thing which, you know, the Premier League is the best thing on this earth, which it might be, in all honesty. And why does it attract the best players? Well, of course, it's the money, as everybody knows. But I think the expectation is because of the Premier League, not necessarily because of England's performances. And the other thing as well, a little bit with them, I feel, is sometimes you try and play a little bit too much. And if you've got that much pace from wide areas, from midfield, etc., just get the ball forward and obviously start to make things happen. Anybody can kind of tippy-tappy it around, but you know, and play in front of other teams. And I just feel with England, if they actually, you know, if you start right up there in terms of your output, you can always come down a little bit once you start winning the game. It's very difficult to go from like 70% to 90-95 in a game because everybody has to be aware that you've got to do it. So the expectation is massive with England, and it always has been, but we'll see because, you know, the other thing with the results when they lose, everybody just goes, well, same old England. It's a bit like talking about Arsenal, isn't it? You know, massive potential at times, and then all of a sudden they end up getting beaten by a team that they should never have even beaten, never even been beaten by.
Mark, you've picked France as your likely winners of the tournament, but the European Championships traditionally have often been quite good for the underdogs, like Denmark in 92, Greece in 2004, even Iceland 4 years ago performed remarkably well as well. So who are you picking as your dark horses for this year's competition?
Oh, my goodness me. Do you know what? I think Scotland might do okay, you know, because the England game is, well, you know, the battle of whatever, and they will be seriously, seriously motivated for that. I could see them getting a draw against England. I really can, and then what we've got, Croatia, and who's the other team we've got to play? Czech Republic, who, you know, well, we know a bit about them because of the West Ham players, etc. And they'll be physical and aggressive. But I think, don't Scotland play them in at Hampden? I think they play them. So, you know, the jocks might just get through. But apart from that, I don't see any massive sort of upsets, I think, as well. I mean, just the way the system and the league is basically, let's be honest, it's to get all the big teams through, isn't it? Because if you seriously mess up in the league basis, you can still crawl in. And I think that's basically that's again a bit of a UEFA thing, which is, you know, let's have everybody in, let's have Portugal and Spain and Italy. You know, Belgium, Belgium and Britain anyway, but they want all those teams basically. They want the best teams in it, don't they? They're not really bothered about the kind of North Macedonians of this world, etc. But that's just the way that UEFA operate.
Just on Scotland, Mark, like I'm just looking at the fixtures here. So they have the Czech Republic in Hampden. The England game's actually in Wembley on Friday the 18th of June, and then
do you know what?
Hampden Park again for Croatia.
That won't matter for the Scots. They love going to Wembley. Absolutely love going to Wembley. The manager he knows what he's doing as well, Steve Clark. It doesn't really matter that they're playing at Wembley because they'll still play the same way against England as they would have done at Hampden. So yeah. So sorry to interrupt.
No, absolutely, fire away. And I guess on the Golden Boot as well, we mentioned a couple of players earlier on. A lot of people back in Harry Kane, understandably so. We mentioned Robert Lewandowski as someone who's been banging in the goals in Bundesliga this year. Romelu Lukaku's in the running too, and there's plenty of others. Yeah. But who do you fancy for the Golden Boot at this one, Mark?
I'm going to give you Griezmann, Antoine Griezmann.
Right.
Purely and simply because I do think France will be in the final, so they'll have played more games than any other team apart from one, and he plays in a team that will create lots and lots of chances, and you know they really seriously can change it from the bench the way that the French play. So I'll go Antoine Griezmann. I mean, Mbappe is going to be a shout as well, isn't he? And I get the Harry Kane thing, but I'm just not sure with England at all. I really aren't. And as I said before, I'm not sure that they know the best team. And there'll be some important people missing from their opening games, as we know. Henderson's a big player for them, and obviously also Maguire.
Griezmann's quite a shout, Mark. I like it. I think Benzema is coming back as well as is possibly a nice shout from the French standpoint as well. It'll be interesting to see if there's any disruption in the chemistry of that team, I guess, with his return. So
bound to be. They're the French. They're bound to fall out. You know they will. It's a bit like, remember, it's now Netherlands, of course, who used to call them the Dutch. And I remember Ruud Gullit, I remember speaking to him at something a long time ago and about the national team. And he said, oh, we're great. He said, and then we just have a row over that somebody's passed the wrong knife. He said, and it all just completely collapses. I mean, the French can be a bit like that. They can be like that as a nation, to be fair, can't they?
It's always pretty funny when it does happen. Like, I mean, nobody lost any sleep in 2010 when the whole thing imploded. Let's just put it that way. Finally, Mark, we're just asking people, is there any young players that you're particularly looking forward to watching? I know probably in England in the UK in general, it's probably like Billy Gilmour in Scotland and Phil Foden in England are probably the two young stars that everyone's most looking forward to. But who are you going for there?
Well, I mean, this, they talk about Sancho, but this kid Bellingham, you know, who is just a kid, isn't he? He plays with a fabulous maturity and he's got great ability. And he's probably, you know, along with Foden and Sancho, the kind of fearless. You know, they haven't really had major disappointments in everything they've done, and they've been extremely well coached. I mean, the two lads who play in Germany, you can just see they're extremely well coached, and they know when to use their ability and when to play easy. But he excites me, Bellingham. He's one of those, you look at him and he's always likely to do something. So listen, he may not even make a start in the first couple of games, but last couple of times I've seen him, he's looked like he's been there 10 years and it just looks so easy to him. And also, he just makes fabulous decisions under pressure. So let's go for him.
So what is actually your prediction with England, so Mark? If you had to call it, sorry, are they going all the way to the final? Is that game against that group of death runner up going to beat them in?
I'm going to go glorious failure,
which means
probably out in the semis.
Out in the semis. Okay, interesting. That could be. Who could that be? That could be Spain or Austria, maybe, is what my predictor is telling me on that semi.
Okay.
Oh, no, sorry,
okay.
The semi, my apologies. No, it would actually be the Netherlands, semis. Turkey, Denmark side of the draw. So that really would be glorious if they managed to get over Portugal and Spain and then lose to Turkey or something. That really would be.
Yeah, well,
that's them.
Yeah. That's them, isn't it? And that's basically what they got. That's what they got in Russia, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Glorious failure.
Absolutely.
I mean, remember when dear old Roy Hodgson was in charge in, was it South Africa?
Yeah.
No, yeah. I mean, they were the first team to lose the two games, weren't they?
Yeah.
The first two games. And I mean, I've spent so many years covering England and stuff, and it's just honestly, it's mad. the whole thing about the whole bandwagon of following England is just bonkers. And they win a game and it's like, wow, they're the best team in the world. And they're so not. But hey, it's just something they got to deal with.
Mark, enjoy the circus.
Will do.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Car insurance is boring, but saving money bounces it into brilliance. Enter promo code SPORT and save €40 off your car insurance with GetSetGo.ie.